have a quorum as at this point, but we'll start the testimony. Representative Hortman, you want to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you ready for me to present my bill?
Just for temporary, I see we do have a quorum now. I think your mic isn't on, too.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I couldn't hear you.
We do have a quorum. Would someone, I'd entertain a motion to move the minutes. Representative Stevenson?
Mr. Chair, I would move the minutes of...
Thank you. Representative Stevenson, move the minutes of March 6th. Any questions or discussion, comment? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move my bill, House File 1463, recommend that it be passed and laid over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill. I do have an amendment, and I don't know how you'd like me to deal with that.
Perhaps you want to take, you should, it's a delete also, you should move the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the DE1 amendment.
All right, thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. I feel the vibration of my cell phone at my feet. That's my son calling to say he's home from school. Let me just turn it off. His next call will be to his father. Members of the committee, I'm very excited about this bill. This bill was brought to me by the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. It's a group of mayors in the metropolitan area. And what the bill would do is it would create a metropolitan transportation district. And within that district, there would be a joint powers board. And the joint powers board would dedicate funding raised by a half a cent increase in the metropolitan area sales tax, and then it would divide up that funding between different transportation projects. The only thing that's different about the DE1 amendment and the bill, and I'll just try to briefly describe the DE1 amendment and then I'll go into the whole bill, is that the DE1 amendment makes very clear that the grants are only to public entities, so the money is only going to be spent through cities, counties, MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council, and the grants wouldn't be made to private entities. And the new language is on page 4, subdivision F at lines 4.28 through 4.32. Mm-hmm. But this time, I guess I would move the DE1 amendment. Did we?
You did move it.
Did we vote on that?
Right. Oh, we didn't vote on it. We don't need to move first. Right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, you're fine. Go ahead.
We did vote on it. Okay. There's two different sections of the bill. There's a metro section of the bill, and there's a greater Minnesota section of the bill. The metro section of the bill takes the seven metropolitan counties, forms a joint powers board, and has each of the counties appoint a county commissioner as a representative on the joint powers board. And then the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities would appoint a city representative from each of those seven counties to serve on the joint powers board. The creation of the joint powers board addresses a very critical issue we have in transportation and transit funding, and that is a governance structure to make spending decisions. Right now we have MnDOT and we have Metropolitan Council, both of whom serve at the pleasure of the governor. And so the recommendations for transportation planning and funding that we receive here at the legislature are constrained by the administration's overall funding ideas. What we really need is an entity to govern transportation dollars that is freed from the constraints of whatever administration is in office and can put forward what the projects are that they think need to be funded for the metropolitan area. I think it's also very important that these are elected officials that are directly elected by the people. The Greater Minnesota portion of the bill would allow one or more Greater Minnesota counties to enter into a joint powers board agreement and levy the same sales tax in their area, 0.5%, and then use the money for transportation. It's very flexible. It allows the joint powers board, whether it's the metro area or the Greater Minnesota joint powers board, to spend the money on roads or transit, capital, or operations. I'm having passed out two things. One is a map of the metro system in Washington, D.C., where I was when I wasn't at our hearing on Tuesday. The second is the 2030 transitway system. What I would propose to you is that the 2030 transitway system is point A. The Washington Metro map is point B. We need a way to move from point A to point B, and we're not getting that type of proposal from Metropolitan Council. We're not getting that type of proposal from MnDOT. That's why this entity of the Joint Powers Board is sorely needed to fill that type of a gap. The bill does call for a referendum, and the reason for doing that is that has been a successful way in other parts of the country to get past the political opposition and the lack of political courage to raise the tax. I don't think referendum government is the best government in the world. But I do think this state sorely needs investment, particularly in transit. We've dedicated funding for roads through the gas tax. We do not have a stable, dedicated source of funding for transit that's comparable. The 40% of the MBEST funds that were approved in the constitutional amendment will certainly help, but they don't go the direction that we need to meet all of the needs. At this point, I would like to introduce to the committee Sarah Erickson from AMM, and she has a few words about the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sarah Erickson. I work for metro area cities, 86 cities in the 7-county metropolitan area, and we'd like to thank Representative Portman for carrying this legislation. Two weeks ago now, I believe, there was a press conference held here at the Capitol where Representative Portman and Senator Dan Larson introduced their bill and had 13 mayors from around the metropolitan area there in support of it. And I would like to draw your attention to a piece of paper that was handed out. There was two articles about the press conference, one from the Pioneer Press and one from the Star Tribune. And we were pretty excited that it generated this much excitement in the metropolitan area. And second, I'd like to draw your attention to a survey that was done by KSTP directly after the press conference was held 2 weeks ago. And the question was asked, would you support or would you oppose a 0.5% increase in the Twin Cities metropolitan sales tax to pay for road improvements? And as you can see by the graph, there was 53% support among respondents. And we were encouraged by that number. There was no education process done. There was no list of projects of what was going to be built. And so we were very encouraged by the 53% respondents. And per also the MBEST amendment that passed overwhelmingly this summer, we think that it is a direct signal from our members, your constituents, that they are in desperate need of transportation funding, and we are hoping that this is a solution or one option that you can use to solve those transportation problems. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Horkman, I see we have an amendment. Is that yours?
No, but I did want to talk about a couple of issues before we start dealing with amendments from members of the committee. And I would like to point out to the committee on page 3 at lines 8 and 9, we list the metropolitan transportation area as the 7 traditionally defined metropolitan counties of Anoka, Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Ramsey, Scott, and Washington. I am interested in expanding that to the 4 other counties of Isanti, Sherburn, Wright, and Chisago. I just wanted to put that, as we move into marking up the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill, I want people to be thinking about whether this should be a 7-county area or an 11-county area. I'm not going to offer that as an amendment, but because we're going to be moving into the markup of the Omnibus Bill, but I'd like to start that conversation with members of the committee. Also at page 3, line 14, I would be interested in striking the word temporarily. This I will move as an amendment. Striking the word temporarily at line 3.14, and then at page 5, line 23, striking the line. Members of the public hate when we enact a tax and we say it's going to be levied for a temporary period of time and then it becomes permanent. Or if we levy a tax...
Representative Horton, excuse me.
Sure.
Where on page 5?
Page 5, line 23. Strike the entire line.
You want to incorporate that in your amendment?
If I could move that additional amendment at this time. I don't know if that has to be a separate amendment since we voted on the other one.
Well, those two we could incorporate because they're basically a technical adjustment. So we can incorporate those. The one word change.
3.14 and 5.23.
Yeah, actually, in line 3.14, you delete the word temporarily.
That's right.
And on page 5, line 5.23, delete the entire sentence. Okay, that's been incorporated. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. And the reason for doing that is the frustration that voters have when we tell them a tax will be temporary, and then it becomes permanent. I have no intention of seeing this tax go away, ever. I think that we have the amount of need to justify this tax on an ongoing basis for capital and operating expenses for a world-class transit system for the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area. And so I don't want to misrepresent to any voter out there that I see this as a temporary thing. I'm willing to agree to temporary, if that's what we have to do in the omnibus bill to get this provision through, but I really think that the needs are there to justify doing this on a permanent basis.
Representative Workman, we have an amendment. Do you want to have any other testimony prior to this amendment?
No. I'd love to get a copy of the amendment, though.
Amendment 8. No, I didn't get that. No, I didn't. Wait a minute. Okay, excuse me, that amendment's for the next bill, that's correct. If not, if there aren't any questions, Representative Superson.
Thank you, Chairman Leader. And Representative, I understand your logic on that, and I guess I would like to have that discussion. I think any time we impose a tax, there ought to be some kind of limit to say we can revisit this in the future at some point, because we don't know what's coming down the road. We don't know what's coming around down the road. You know, ideally, somebody would discover an anti-gravity element, and we could do away with roads altogether. But if we impose a half-cent sales tax, at least to revisit it on a periodic basis, I think kind of keeps us conscious that these things are levied for a particular purpose, and if that purpose has gone away, then it kind of checks us to say, get rid of the tax. Now, I think the Golden Gate Bridge is a classic, the Bay Bridge is a classic example, where they put a dollar tax on for, I think, about 20 years, and they said they were going to revisit it. It paid for itself about 7 times over, and they never took the tax off. And I guess at that point, you know, there's some point where we have to say as government, we're only doing this for a particular period of time because we see a need and we want to meet that need with this particular tax. And I think it'd be good to have that discussion. I understand where you're coming from. I don't think any of us want to be disingenuous, but I think in the same context, we want to say, voters, you have hope in the future of not having to pay this tax. So that would be my input, Mr. Chair.
Did you have a comment, Representative?
Sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Segerson, just like we don't sunset the income tax or the sales tax because we recognize their core government functions that they will continue to fund, that's the same philosophy I have behind this. And I can't think of any function of government that's more core than education and roads. When I go door to door and I talk to people, the one thing that they are all sure that they want their government to do is education and roads. And I know we're going to have this need in the future. But I am willing to be flexible on it to get the votes I need to get it through.
Well put, Mr. Chair.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I note you took the temporary language out. My question is on page 5, line 5.6. What is your intention for the meaning of regional transportation projects? What are those? It says they has to be used exclusively for regional transportation projects.
Representative Horton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the Joint Powers Board would determine which were regional transportation projects, and they would fund only projects that met that qualification.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so then you're asking the counties to vote for a sales tax, and then have the Joint Powers Board determine which what projects those would fund. Is that a correct understanding?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, that's the way I envision it working. And the reason why I think that it would work is if you imagine that we have the seven counties and the seven cities on the board. If the city of Brooklyn Park goes to the Joint Powers Board and says, we would like some funding for Edenbrook Parkway, the chances of you ever driving on Edenbrook Parkway are somewhere between slim and none. But if they come to the regional or the Joint Powers Board and they say, we'd like some help with finishing Highway 610, which would benefit the area on a more regional basis, the Joint Powers Board would be much more likely to view favorably a project that has regional significance, and they'd say to Brooklyn Park, you need to look at your city budget for that local project.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at it as the outside of the metropolitan area, basically rural Minnesota, where you need two or more counties to join up, and as I understand it, you ask them to put a tax in, or asking the people to vote for a tax in, and then having the this Joint Powers Board decide where they would spend the money, and I don't know if there's a time limit on that either, or is it when a project is done, or... I would support a change of this to just let a county have, do it itself and not mess around with it, because if you have counties in rural Minnesota committee members that have a regional center and have a much larger population and want to join up with an adjoining county possibly with a small population, they pretty much are going to run the vote through and basically fund the project that they want to fund. So that's one suggestion that I would suggest we make as we think about this for the future.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, at line 5.1 where it says 2, we could change that to 1, and line 5.2 after joint powers agreement, we could say, or acting as a county board. And then at line 5.6, we could strike the word regional. Because when I did read this bill draft, I thought we do want to give counties the ability to act alone to meet their transportation needs in this way.
Well, Mr. Chair, if...
Representative Magnus?
If it's agreeable to the committee, I would just have an understanding. We visited about this. When we do the markup, we won't have to make the change now, if that's all right with you folks. I think we should have a discussion about this when we mark the bill up, because I do have concerns about that.
Representative Magnus, you're correct. This bill will be laid over. I didn't say that.
So we can...
I know if you want to incorporate now. Okay.
But, and Mr. Chairman, I do have a question, too. Basically, as I look at the bill, at least in the metro area, I see this as a tax for transit, basically. I would anticipate they would do some road construction, but basically it's a transit bill as I see it. And I would ask our fiscal staff, could you give us an idea how much general fund money is going to transit now?
Ms. Sewers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the base appropriation for Greater Minnesota Transit and then for the Metropolitan Council for fiscal years 08 and 09 is about $195 million. And a portion of that is trunk highway funds. That would be about... $1.4 million of that is trunk highway funds.
Ms. Suarez, when you say trunk highway funds, would you explain that? Because normally we don't use trunk highway funds for transit.
For Greater Minnesota Transit, $1.4 million is used for trunk highway funds. And my understanding of that is that it is used, it's for planning purposes, and it's how the transit system works with the highways.
Ms. Sewers, I think those are pass-through monies, right?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure on that. I'll have to get back to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman...
Yeah, Representative Magnus, I presume.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I thought we spent about $200 million out of the general fund, basically, for transit, and I would... It's my understanding this bill would raise on the tax on the metro area, it would raise about $220 million a year. I got that from Representative Earhart's physical numbers when he had his bill in creating this. So I was wondering if we were going to use this tax here to replace the general fund tax that we're, general funds we're taking out now, or is this in addition, or how do we envision as we go as we think about this kind of bill?
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Sarah Erickson will respond to that question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, I think in response to it would definitely be on top of, it would not be to replace general funds in any way. And we are leaving it up to the discretion of the Joint Powers Board what they see fit as far as transit, operating capital, roads, bridges, county or city roads. And I just came from a capital investment hearing with Representative Houseman where I think there was upwards of $600 million in requests for transit corridors around the metropolitan area. The need is definitely there, but I would definitely not pigeonhole this as a transit tax.
Ms. Erickson, it was
$67,950,000. Oh, excuse me. I was trying to make it
work. But who's counting?
That was basically, and it was basically for studies. So you're close. That was just basically for the studies.
I apologize.
Go ahead.
Representative Magnus, I don't know if Transit for Livable Communities will be passing out. They have a great spreadsheet that they've put together. There are $4.1 billion of needs in capital and operating expenses in transit between 2007 and 2020. That amounts to about $290 million a year additional in what we would really like to see to get the 2030 system done by 2020. This is definitely in addition to and not instead of. The Transportation Amendment on the Constitution got 200,000 more votes than our governor. And I think the reason why there was such a strong vote on that amendment is because people see very clearly that we are underinvesting in transportation.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that coalition outspent the governor on the race. But number two, and Mr.
Chair, Representative Magnus, I'm quite sure it did not.
Well, it was $7 million. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, I have concerns also as we look at the transit portion, and I know I wanted to ask a question about general funds because we had a discussion the other day. Representative Medora brought up the idea of what in the world are we doing, taking education money away from kids, and I think Representative Morgan talked about health care, and what in the world are we doing, taking health care money away and putting it into transportation. And I just wanted to make sure you understood we're already taking about $200 million out of the general fund budget. And when you add more taxes on and more taxes on it for transportation, then you're squeezing the budgets also. So I wanted to point that out just to have a little background of this. But I'm also concerned not only with the amount of money going to transit, frankly, as a rural member, I understand we need the need for transit, but I'm also concerned about the operations of transit. And as we build and continue to build larger and larger transit facilities and operations here in the state, all of us understand that they are not self-sufficient by any means. And I think the Hiawatha line gets about 30% of its operating revenue from the fares. So somebody else is kicking in a lot of money. And as we build these huge transit systems, someone has to operate them, and I think that's one of the myths we have. We have this great idea that, gee, you know, we'll build a $700 million transit system, and then that cost ends up costing over $1 billion. That's been our experience in the past. And then we have the issue that, oh, well, gee, I thought we'd build this, and then we'd be in happily ever after, and never have to worry about it, and all of a sudden we've got to fund two-thirds of the operating costs. So just some statements, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman, you want to respond?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, the roads don't pay for themselves either. Right now when we fill up our gas tanks, we are not paying for the cost of the roads that we're driving on when we drive out of that gas station. Our property taxes are paying for almost half of the transportation expenses in the state right now. And so when we talk about operating subsidy, we have to recognize there's an operating subsidy with pavement as well as an operating subsidy with transit. and I recognize the transit's not self-supporting, but neither are the roads. We could raise the gas tax 42 cents and completely eliminate the property tax money that's currently being spent on roads, but I don't think there's any appetite to raise the gas tax by 42 cents a gallon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it's a common understanding since the whole time of horses and buggies here that we do maintain the roads, and it is going to cost money to maintain the roads, and we do that. But what we didn't have an understanding was if we were going to continue to take shots at the general fund and take shots at the trunk highway fund, highway and road bridge funds to operate the transit systems. And that's a myth that we have in the state, and it continues on.
Representative Galen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Magnus's original question about the word regional, that's me to thinking, of course, and I think Representative Hortman, you know that the question is going to be...
Too bad you weren't here at the beginning.
Yeah, and I do sincerely apologize for babysitting another portion of my big energy bill, and I apologize for if you could just either quickly address, or you could say that you'll talk to me separately, but not only Chicago County that's at the edge of the metro area and 70% of our workforce commutes to the cities, but also Sherburne and other areas. And you know, when we saw Mr. Bell's approach or his map that showed the use of ridership, what was missing there was the use of potential ridership of cars that we can get off the roads, that we can reduce congestion and really accomplish what we need to accomplish with our transportation infrastructure. So can you address the regional metro piece?
Thank you. That was a comment, or was that a
question? It was a question, actually. If you could address the regional, what happens outside the seven-county limit, and how far do we reach with this transportation project? What gets considered?
Representative Leader, Chair Leader, Representative Kalin, at the beginning of the hearing, I talked about line 3.8 and 3.9, how I'd be happy to see an amendment offered that would add the counties of Isanti, Sherburne, Wright, and Chisago, because I really believe we live in an 11-county metropolitan region, and that we should start treating it that way. And as somebody who lives in Hennepin County within the Metropolitan Council taxing district, I would really like to see all those people represented by those red dots on those maps that are using the park and rides that I paid for. I'd really like to see them paying for that transit as well. So I have an interest as a taxpayer and as a policymaker in seeing us starting to look at this as an 11-county metro area.
Thank you.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hogan, I think, you know, when we're talking about putting this in addition to already the $200 million that's currently coming out of the general fund, I also go back to the motor vehicle sales tax, which was constitutionally dedicated now, of which 47.5% comes out of the outstate, 52.5% comes from in-state, and the outstate is not getting a lot of the dollars that we need to maintain outstate. So when I hear you say that it's going to be on top of the $200 million that's currently come out of the general fund, and it says to me that there's no additional dollars that are going to the outstate, and that's going to be a fight for the remainder that comes off of that. Causes me some concern, and I think there needs to be a total readjustment. If we're talking about doing a metro transit tax, half cent sales tax, there's got to be all of the stuff thrown back into the pot and say, okay, excuse me, half of the invest is coming outstate, half is coming from metro. Then let's throw that into the mix and do a redivvy on that as well. And just going back to the issue of the end date, I think you could, you know, I could put on, basically, if you take the end date off, I won't vote for it. If you put an end date on, I will. But I don't think that's as much a point as the issue when you take it to the referendum for the voter. Whenever you're throwing a half cent sales tax at them at the ballot box without an end date, I think they're going to be much more hesitant to say yes than if you say we're going to put this on for 10, 20 years.
Representative Hartman, you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, I think that Greater Minnesota Transit is as important as metro area transit. The first 2 months serving in the legislature on Representative Earhart's Transportation Policy Committee in 2005, I said we should rename it the Doom and Gloom Committee, because we heard from Greater Minnesota Transit Agency after Greater Minnesota Transit Agency saying we don't have enough capital, we don't have enough operating expenses, and you've seen in our field hearings in St. Cloud and all around, the disabled community, the senior community, people who can't afford to own a car, really relying on transit. We need very healthy transit statewide. And that's part of the reason that I love this bill, is it gives counties the flexibility to do this, to tax themselves and spend the money in their own area where they raised it to help their transit and road system.
Represent Severson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hellman. So is there a redistribution of motor vehicle sales tax funds through this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, no.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Earhart, you had a question?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Portman, on page one of the Toledo Amendment, Subdivision 5, Highway Spending in the Metropolitan Transit District, Transportation District, what I'm focusing on is there seems to be a limit that spending on for capital improvement apparently can't move more than 2 percentage points up or down from an average. Could you explain that a little, make it a little more clear to me? Particularly my concern is it seems to limit the ability to grow on the upward side. I don't mind that they're not allowed to spend less, but what if another big project or interchange comes along? Congressman Oberstar gets us a little money or something. What does this then mean? Is there a limiting factor on highway construction there? Speak to that, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the rationale was, of course, that MnDOT not look at the metropolitan area and say, oh, okay, now they've got the sales tax, we can cut way back on the money that we're giving them out of the trunk highway funds. But I'll let Sarah Erickson speak to the way that it was drafted.
That is the rationale. There was some concerns by metropolitan area legislators that if the metropolitan area suddenly has a funding source for roads or transit, that it would be seen by either MnDOT or the Met Council as a funding source, and they could start shifting funds to Greater Minnesota. So that was the rationale for putting that language in there.
Representative Beard, I agree with you. I think that's a cause for concern, and I think Representative Horton definitely will look at it because there's a normal fluctuation. Just it just can't happen, you know. And I think probably you should. That's one that definitely is a problem. I think in the bill, Representative Beard.
I was just going to say thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't mind if you put a floor on it so they can't do what you were afraid they might do, but it seems that it also caps it so they can't bump it more than 2% if we decide we want to do that. Thanks.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, in between now and markup, let's talk about how to phrase that so we don't get penalized.
Appreciate it.
We may, but the bill is going quite a bit lengthy already. We have to opposition testifiers too, so we're probably getting into that. Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Portman. I think I've talked to you about this before, but with the sales tax option, I would like to see something in here, and I understand there's other bills that have that language, and so I'm just proposing it as a proposal out here to think about. But counties that are outside, like Chisago County, that Representative Kalin likes to talk about, that would like to participate in the Metropolitan Taxing District, that any one county that borders and existing joint powers could vote to opt into that, collect the sales tax, and continue that. Ideally, I'd like to see the sales tax statewide, and then the taxes that are raised in an individual county could go to that individual counties for their transportation needs, so that all counties would get. We don't have this argument that we're spending it here and taking and raising it here and spending it someplace else. But ideally, that's what I'd ideally like to see, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I would like to see that, at least in this section here on page 5, we're talking about the Joint Powers Board and two or more starting of some way of allowing counties that are bordering the metropolitan counties, if they choose to opt in so that they can participate in the transit opportunities here, that they can, by opting in, they can collect the sales tax in their district and get the benefit of some of that transit investment.
I agree.
Thank you. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Foreman, I'm looking at section 4, page 5, 515 through 517 on the appropriation for the special election for the metro area. And I'm wondering if under subdivision 4 for the outstate areas, I know it mentions general election, but if they do the special election as well, would they be in have to seek reimbursement or the appropriation from the Secretary? And if that's an amendment you'd be willing to consider.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, that's a great suggestion in draft and language.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a number of concerns, and I'm not, I just want to put them on the table for you to chew on in the next week or so working with this. First of all, in your page one, subdivision five, I agree with Representative Beard, you've got some major work to do there, but you also have to address the CASA and MSA numbers. If, in fact, the metropolitan area is going to impose a tax upon themselves, in my opinion, it should not supplant or negate their ability to compete fairly for the state money. Otherwise, they're paying twice. And to the degree that the way that this is set up takes care of problems in the metropolitan area and makes us less and less needy, if you will, based on needs formulas, then over a period of time, the metropolitan area, well, in my opinion, in many instances, they do very poorly in the distribution as it is now, will even do worse. The whole issue of a joint powers board, I'm assuming that this will go to local government, but I think you've got some work there on the structure of it, whether it's subject to open meeting law, compensation, standards for whether or not if a county fails to appoint somebody. I mean, there's lots of organizational kind of components that you're completely silenced on here, and this is going to be a lot of money, and there has to be a lot of accountability in this board and how they distribute it. In addition, I would look at some type of minimum appropriation for transit versus roads, so that when the voters know, they will know that there won't be 100% transit or 100% roads. Well, certainly we can leave it up to some board, I think, some language. Many times we've talked about a 40-40 with a 20%, you know, slush back and forth based on the needs and the different transportation systems. Relative to your comment about those red dots outside the transit taxing district, 95% of the money running the transit system currently in the metropolitan area comes from all taxpayers that pay state and federal taxes. And we hear a lot of whining, especially from those opt-outs in the perimeter of the transit taxing about those red dots outside of the area. The reality is should those red dots go to another transit system, that ridership drives their funding. Those people on their buses is how they get additional funding for Metro Transit. So all of this whining about the people that live outside of the boundaries, number one, they're paying the vast share of the costs for the transit system. As riders, they're participating in the fare costs. And should those areas decide to develop their own transit systems and recoup the headcount, if you will, from their area and beyond, it may actually be a major detriment to the operation of the current transit systems as we know them. General comments about the policy of this. One of the things I like to say is when the Iron Range got in trouble and had needs, we didn't give them the pleasure of taxing themselves. When the farm community got in trouble and had needs, we didn't give them the pleasure of taxing themselves. We came up with job Z zones and biofuel subsidies, and we do all kinds of things. I think this is a very, very, very dangerous path to go down, and in the long run could leave Greater Minnesota at a very large disadvantage in getting the needed funding for their transportation systems. I agree with that we need more money for transportation and transit. There's no question about that. But I think that this this can be very, very dangerous for the health of the state as a whole, and particularly the transportation system as a whole. I still believe we are one state.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, just a brief comment on the issue of Greater Minnesota. I think as long as we're leaving the CASA formula the same as it is under the gas tax, the 20 cents gas tax that's already in place, and we're only looking at a new funding formula for the any additional gas tax that we may impose this legislative session, if we do, Greater Minnesota is doing pretty well under the formulas that we have in place, and the metro area is not. So I do share your concern about we are one Minnesota, and I would like a transportation system that serves us as a state. But given the way that the existing gas tax revenues are divided up, I have a little worry that Greater Minnesota will go hungry.
Do you have any other testifiers in support? Otherwise, we do have some people that apparently would care to testify against.
Other than Representative Earhart, I don't know of anyone.
Did you have a question, Webster?
Oh, I did. I just had a comment, Mr. Chairman, and that is, I don't see that the states of Arizona, California, Colorado, Washington, Massachusetts, and others are in a state of disarray and have crumbled away because their local cities have imposed, or regions have imposed, city sales taxes. To fund their transportation systems. So I didn't worry about Minnesota falling apart because there's metro and other imposed sales tax to fund their transportation system.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any other one in support of the bill? If not, Mr. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Back again on my own dime. You know, sometimes when you come and testify, if you talk about money, they ask you if an economist. If you talk about the transportation, they ask you if an engineer. Well, I don't know. I spend money. I've made money, and I ride the bus and all of that. So I understand a lot of this stuff. But I hear to say, well, Minnesota, we're number one in this, and we're number one in that. And I don't know. I see all the hospitals are full, and obesity is rampant. The kids are full of sugar, salt, fat, and caffeine. The drug war and the prostitution situation continues on in North Minneapolis, unabated. They add more cops, there's more drug dealers, more arrests, more prostitutes.
Mr.
Now I realize that
would you speak to the bill,
I'm
please?
Going to come to it, but I need to give you a little platform first.
I'll give you a little leeway, but
because you're really in trouble, you know. You got. I attended the Transportation Senate Committee today, and I went to the Judiciary Committee and the Capital Investment. I don't know where you're going to get all this money to do it, because you only have two places for money to come from. You either borrow it or you raise taxes. Both of it undesirable places. I don't know how you can borrow anymore. The list I have here shows that we already owe $23,696,662,000 in bonded stuff. I don't know how we're going to pay all that back. Now you're going to borrow more money for more roads. I saw a report that shows that if, where do you borrow this money from? Say you want to borrow $1,700,000,000. I don't call it bonding. It's borrowing. You don't have any bonds to sell. You don't have anything to sell. Just air and the ability to take my money away from me in order to give it to somebody else. So say you're going to borrow that money, the $1.7 million, from whom? Who's sitting around with my bill? I don't know. Well, I asked the guy about that in Minneapolis when they built the library. I said, where are you going to get that $130 million from? He said, well, we're going to bond it. We're going to borrow it. And sure enough, those folks in New York, they sent them some money when the bills came due for $20, $30 million at a chunk. And they sent it over in the computer. And the guy says, I said, well, how did you do that? He said, well, it came to us, and then we electronically transferred it over to the contractor. I said, well, how did that work? He said, well, it worked. They took it, and they built that library on a bunch of air. Some people sent some electronic digits from New York, and they built a library downtown Minneapolis for $130 million that in 30 years is going to cost us $300 million, $10 million a year for 30 years, $170 million in interest. So if you keep going and borrowing money, by the year 2016, the service of the debt, city, county, state, federal, consumer debt, will be so high, the interest, the service of the debt, that all the income of all the American earners will not be sufficient to pay it without buying food, clothing, or shelter, or anything else. We're heading for a catastrophe. That's actually upon us, but we haven't felt this because we're still borrowing and borrowing and doing that. So how can we go forward when we've already presented a bill to you, House File 619, that must be heard and looked at because either I'm nuts or all red, or the guys I'm working with that have been working on this stuff for 20 years, for two decades, working on how money is created and comes into circulation. And I'll tell you, it's not the tooth fairy and it's not the black helicopters. The money is created by the banks out of thin air. Oh, there are some equations and percentages that they can only lend out this or they can lend out that. But How can a country be $8.5 or $9 trillion in debt unless somebody is creating money someplace that's not back, that doesn't exist? So you're stuck. You're not going to be able to satisfy the transportation system in Minnesota. And I think you do. I support state-of-the-art roads and bridges and transit and all of that, and I think we should have that. So what I'm doing is I'm imploring you to hear House File 619 thoroughly. I've asked the Senate to do that also. Give it a good look and say, is this going to work? Do we do what this thing says is to build and provide permanent funding to build and maintain great roads, bridges, and mass transit without taxes or borrowing? So, you know, when I get send this around to people, I call the telephone company. I said, listen, you're going to have to put in a main line to my place because the lines are going to be burning up with people calling. I get home, and not a call. I call the phone company. I said, must be something wrong with the phone. You think people would be throwing over themselves to get to the phone and say, wait a minute, how can we do this? State-of-the-art roads and bridges without taxes or borrowing? It's not possible. Well, we have the plan. Mr. Byron Gale has been coming down here almost day after day, week after week, for years, trying to explain to everybody how money is created and comes into circulation and how this will work. So all I'm asking you to do is to have a hearing on House File 619, a thorough hearing, bringing the bankers and the economists with their gibberish who will tell you that money is created, that inflation is caused by too much money chasing too few goods. That's a bunch of bunk that the economists are giving you. But money, inflation is created because of the interest. And if you're going to borrow more money, it's actually irresponsible to borrow more money. It's irresponsible to tax the people anymore.
Have you just about completed
30 seconds.
Okay.
So all I'm asking you to do, I gave you that piece of literature, I gave you another piece today, and I ask you to ponder one thing. How can it be that the banking system, which produces nothing, has all the money, while we, the people who produce all the wealth, by combining our labor and ideas and our resources collectively, go deeper in debt to the banking system? So please, hear House File 619 thoroughly before you move forward with any bonding or funding or taxing. Thanks for your patience. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Yes,
Aaron Sexton, were you?
Mr. Sherman, just a comment. It looks to me like this handout, that the only people that have done well are the beef farmers. Farmers are striking again with how many 21.5 market shares to purchase a truck.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you'd allow me to comment on that.
We do have some more testimony.
I know, but I think we ought to be building roads and be trading beef cattle for it. And we could leave the, I want to keep the BS back at home to fertilize the fields with. But,
Anyhow, thank you. For
no,
Ms. Sexton, welcome to the committee.
I'm talking to
Ms. Sexton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that note, my name is Erin Sexton with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, and I'll be very brief in my comments. We have done we do a number of things with our members. We do policy development sessions. We do we have a transportation policy committee, and we've done a number of polls. And what we've heard back from our members on sales tax increase for transportation and transit is that they do not support it at this time. And I just want to briefly give you a couple of reasons why. I think many people fail to recognize that the sales tax is a significant business tax, that businesses do pay 45% of the sales tax in Minnesota, according to the Department of Revenue. Before we move forward on looking at increasing our sales tax, I would encourage you to look at the sales tax base and how we can reform that sales tax base to reduce the business inputs that are in it right now. Tax policy experts agree that the sales tax base should not include these business inputs, and by continuing to grow the sales tax with its current structure, we fear that more and more constituencies will just become more and more dependent on it in its current form. So prior to moving forward to this, we would hope we could have that discussion on our sales tax base. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Were there any questions? No, thank you, Ms. Sexton.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if I was supposed to stay up there or move back here, but
I did want to say I will be introducing a bill to lower the sales tax to 4.5% and broaden it. I think Ms. Sexton might like that bill. And I do think that's a realistic concern when we look across the country and we're talking about raising the sales tax incrementally. We have to look at how we compare to other states.
Thank you. We do have another testifier, Allison Chandler. Or Alyssa Chandler. Alyssa, I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair members. My name is Alyssa Chandler. I represent the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association, for the association that represents all the new car dealers in the state of Minnesota. And I apologize if I am misunderstanding the DE1 amendment, but the way I read it, especially in Section 3, Subdivision 3, that the one-half percent extra sales tax, metro area sales tax, would apply not only to 297A sales, which is the general sales tax area, but it would also apply to 297B sales, which is the MVEST. So Representative Portman and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, and we just briefly exchanged comments, and so no one has ever talked to us about increasing the MVEST, and since the MVEST is a tax that only applies to our product, you can imagine that this we take this very seriously. The legislature, in doing local option sales taxes around the state of Minnesota, obviously there are other cities that have the ability to do a half a percent sales tax. Legislature usually gives the local government the option of doing an additional $20 excise tax that can that would apply to the sale of a motor vehicle within that jurisdiction. And that's usually how that works with respect to motor vehicle sales, because again, motor vehicle sales are taxed on the 297B, they're taxed on the MVAT. And you know, I'm sure I don't have to point out to you that, you know, a motor vehicle sale is, for anyone's household, a very major purchase. It's really second only to your home in the seriousness of the purchase. It's not an impulse buy, and it's not too far-fetched to imagine that people will gladly drive outside of the metro area to avoid a 7% sales tax on a motor vehicle. So I just wanted to be on the record as saying that this is a very big deal to our industry. It would devastate our dealerships within the 7-county area or 11-county area or whatever this bill will eventually apply to, and I just did want to be on the record as opposing an increase in the MVEST. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Erickson, were you going to?
Chair, Sarah Erickson, Metro Cities. As far as the provision that Mr. Lander is talking about, it was a discussion that I had with Senate Counsel as far as the how this tax is going to apply. So if there was some miscommunication, we can definitely talk to research about it and get it straightened out.
Thank you. This bill will be laid over. I don't believe we have any more comment or opposition. We've actually spent quite a bit of time. So, Representative Hortman, would you want to renew your motion that, what is it, House File 1463 is amended, be held over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Omnibus Finance Bill?
I do.
Thank you. The next bill up is House File 1112, Representative Tip Nador. Welcome, Representative Nador. Do you want to move your bill?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'd like to move House File 1112, but before we do that, I do have an amendment to offer.
Yes, okay. We'll just bring it up. That's what we'll accept. Please, you move the bill so we can discuss it. Just before you get started, Representative Nador, we have a real number of testifiers, and we're going to limit the testimony because it appears they're all in support. And we'll take the ones that come from probably a further distance first.
Okay.
So we can get them out of town before the rush, well, the rush is here. Representative Nador, are all those through your amendments?
No, Mr. Chair, I only have one. It's amendment H1112A1.
Thank you, because they gave me free copies of it. We'll just take one.
We had a very...
Do you want to move that amendment before you discuss the bill, or do you want to discuss the bill?
Yes, I will move that amendment. Mr. Chair.
Representative Medora moves Amendment H1112A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this amendment deals is we had a happy discovery in recalculating the numbers that we were able to move the MVEST portion from 31.9 to 35.5 and meet the service needs for Greater Minnesota. So that's what this amendment specifically deals with, the recalculation of the MVEST portion for the bill.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, can I now discuss the bill, or do we have to do anything with that?
You explain the amendment. Do you want to testify on the bill before your testifiers do? I mean, comment on your bill?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Then, Mr. Chair and members, we're here today to discuss a transit bill. What this bill does is it offers a comprehensive statewide transit funding bill. It allows us to build the Metropolitan Council's 2030 plan by 2020, which will include 8 new transitways. It will double our bus system. It will allow $14 million a year to counties and cities to help leverage dollars to build those transitways. And the plan, again, will be built within 14 years and not 25, as the current projection is out. It addresses the real needs of transit and that it will help the 6 counties in rural Minnesota that do not have any kind of transit service. And it also will allow to increase evening and weekend service. In particular, we're looking at helping the disabled community be able to use the rural Minnesotan transit services to 14 hours a day, and this increased funding will be able to do that. How we get to this is offering a 0.5 cent regional sales tax to the 7 county area with a distribution for the MVEST funds from what's currently being proposed now, 38 to Metropolitan, 2 to rural, to 35.5. And to be honest, I've had some discussions with members about the fact that this is a 7 county metro sales tax, and why am I giving more money out to rural Minnesotans? But to be honest, I feel very comfortable with this. I think rural Minnesotans right now are suffering under a MnDOT budget that can't afford to keep up with their demands. They have indicated that they need approximately $23 million a year in order to operate their plans, and this amendment will do that. And I'm with the tax base that we have here. I think it's fair. I really do. And with this, too, I also would like to address that we do have to be looking out at the number. We do need to be looking out for the 20% of Minnesotans who have disabilities. 14% of those are working-age adults, ages 21 to 64. The objective of this is to be able to get them out and get them into jobs, which helps us all with collecting income tax, which I know that makes us all happy and allows us to pay for this. I do have some testifiers here. Mr. Dave Van Adam is going to go... He's going to go through a quick presentation.
If I could just, before General starts, we have on the list 8 testifiers. We have one more bill, so to committee, we can accommodate this if we watch the length of our questions and the length of the answers.
And we will try to be brief.
I forgot his name.
We're not working.
Okay, I'm sorry. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Dave Van Hattem with Transit for Livable Communities. And I'll be speaking on behalf of a coalition called the Transit Partners Coalition. Several others will be Bill's additional testifiers. A couple of other groups that are part of that coalition that won't be testifying include the Senior Federation, the League of Women Voters, and the Alliance for Metropolitan Stability. We're trying to get the technology to work, but it doesn't seem to be happening. We did it 2 nights ago in the Senate without the technology, so you hopefully have received the PowerPoint slides.
Right, we do have.
Okay, then I'll work from that, and if technology starts working, you'll see even more impressive pictures. As Representative Medora noted, this is the comprehensive statewide transit funding bill. What we've heard over the past month in the field hearings, the joint field hearings by the House and the Senate about transit is that the public is out there really clamoring for more transit. We heard it from the business community, from the local elected officials, from neighbors, from seniors, from youth, from the disabled. And what they're saying is that they want choices. They want alternatives to congestion, to higher gas prices, and they want basic access to jobs and to other cultural opportunities. The problem in this region is that the status quo isn't getting us there. You've already heard that this evening. If you look at the first map in the sequence, this is the Met Council's 2030 plan. It's a decent plan as far as it goes, but it won't get us real transit choices for nearly a quarter of a century. If you look at the next picture on your PowerPoint, this shows a snapshot of that plan at 2020. By no means is this a regional transit system. You lose the two commuter rails in the East Metro. You lose the very popular Southwest LRT. And we just don't believe that's sufficient. You also don't ramp up the bus system. The other part of the plan is that you double bus ridership by 2030. And so that's happening at a much slower pace as well. If you go to the third map, and I think it was also passed around, things gets even more interesting because the vision that we're hearing around the region is actually much broader than the Met Council's 2030 plan. There's interest in light rail primarily and on Robert Street as well as I-94, 494, 394, all those corridors, as well as the North Shore Express, which I think is labeled correctly on your map, previously called the Cambridge Commuter Rail, going up to the north. And we're working? Yeah. As well as the North Shore Express going to the north, Cambridge and on to Duluth. So the bill that you're hearing today is the bill that can finance this system. It can do the eight transit ways. It can double the bus system all by 2020. And in addition, you could take one of those pink lines and make it red for light rail all by 2020. Very quickly, I'll just go through these slides super quickly in concern for time. The reason we invest in transit is related to economic competitiveness and being an alternative, a system to manage congestion. We know the congestion costs are very high, and we know that transit effectively reduces the delays and the cost of those delays in terms of people's time and energy at about $164 million per year in savings in the region. But equally important, transit is a way that helps working families increase their wealth. It's an alternative to the very high expense of car ownership. Households in this region on average spend $9,300 per year on transportation. For those lower income families, that's often a greater expense than housing. The transportation expense is often greater than housing. Regions that have better transit that you'll see in just a moment, in those regions, households spend on average $1,000 less per year. When you multiply that by the number of households in our metro, that's $1 billion in savings to those households. This is a very real way for families in Minnesota to move away from car costs into the equity and the wealth associated with home ownership. You'll hear from other testifiers about the environmental impact. I'll just move on quickly and get to some more of the detail of this plan. As we've noted, this plan implements the 2030 plan by 2020. So what that does is move up all the Tier 2 projects, the Southwest LRT, the two Rush Line and Red Rock, moves those up to a 2020 timeline. Also, the next set of projects are all those that aren't currently in the Met Council's plan, the ones I've already mentioned, but also the Phase 2 of the North Star. We think this funding package can build this system in a pay-as-you-go manner by 2020 in that 14-year time horizon. If you work through this table, the need in the metro we estimate to be $350 million. If you look at the one-page handout that has this table, if you flip it to the other side, we've calculated both the capital and operating for all of those eight transitways and doubling the bus system. That averages over a 14-year period, $300 million per year. The other $50 million we route $15 million per year back to counties for bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, as well as transit-oriented development. A key point here is that we're still left with $35 million per year with this funding source that we'll get to. That would allow us to see some of these projects that are being put forward for study actually be implemented in this timeline, again, in that 14-year timeline. Moving on quickly to Greater Minnesota, we estimate the need to be $23 million per year. We have the funding with the 35-5 split. One thing to note, getting to the funding mechanism, we again estimate everything on the 14-year time horizon, what the 7-county metro sales tax would raise per year is $272 million on average. The key point here is that for an average individual in the metro, that equals out to $80 per person per year, or the equivalent of 2 tanks of gas. We think that's a phenomenal investment for the region and one we should be making sooner rather than later. Very quickly, we like to compare the Twin Cities to other regions because we think transit and transportation investments are about economic competitiveness, are about quality of life, are about how this region prospers. When we look at the peer average, we looked at 9 other cities across the country, similar in population. The peer average, they invest about 30% more than we do per capita in public transit. And what they get for that is some very spectacular transit systems. This is the Twin Cities. This is the diagram of the Hiawatha Light Rail. We have one line right now at 17 stations. Uh-huh. It has been a phenomenal success. I think all of you are familiar with the ridership numbers, well above projections, adding a third car to the train, incredible development associated with it. But when we compare to these peers, you look at Dallas has 3 lines and 42 stations, Denver 4 lines and 38 stations, Portland 4 lines and 67 stations. And the point here is not that other regions spend more money or even that they have nice-looking transit systems. The point is, what is the outcome of this investment? And again, those peer regions, on average, 63% more ridership per capita. This investment in transit is getting people out of cars, is helping to manage congestion, is giving folks throughout the metro and throughout the state choices besides driving alone. Just to conclude, we're convinced that there's extremely high demand for transit in this region and statewide. The ridership numbers tell us that. In 2006, ridership was up 5% in the metro, 11% on suburban routes. Currently, there's 24 park and rides, many of them huge park and rides that are over capacity. The public wants to use more transit. They've also told us in polling that they would prefer to, they would support an increased investment in transit, and they would actually prefer it over adding highways. We think it's time to make this investment. We think House File 1112 does it, and we think it's critical in terms of securing matching federal dollars. When we look at those peer regions, if you think about Portland, over the last 25 years, they got $800 million more in federal matching funds than the Twin Cities did. When we look to the future, Denver, by 2020, we'll add 121 miles of light rail. That's a certainty, and we're in line to get the federal match for every penny of that. Our current plan, going back to the 2030 plan, will add 51 miles in this region. It's time that we make the investment, we get the outcomes from this investment, and we support House File 1112. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Adam. Are there questions? If not, thank you. Representative Medora. We have an individual testifying to come from out.
Yes.
Mr. Hiley, and if you could check with your other, I think you probably want to have all these addresses, and I'd like to have you choose which ones you, we may not get to them all.
That's exactly it. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
But
if we could have Jim?
Representative Medora, we have an individual that's from Duluth, I believe.
Yes, okay. That's who that is.
Mr. Hiley.
Just very quickly, what's being circulated is written testimony from two Transit for Livable Community members. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, would it be all right after this that I just have one more individual? I guess the organizations, these are all reputable organizations. I'm sure we've all been visited by them. For the sake of time, I'll just, if I could just have my other...
Representative Medora, I appreciate that, except I know they took time to come here and they maybe want to testify. And,
okay.
I'd like to do it if we could accommodate it. Mr. Heilig, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Leader. Again, my name is Jim Heilig. I'm Director of Administration for the Duluth Transit Authority. Not close enough. Okay, I'm actually proud to be here and support this House File 1112. This bill is a comprehensive transit bill, which those of us that have been playing in the transit field for a few years would love to see get passed. From a Greater Minnesota standpoint, it funds our 2001 plan by 2020. a little behind. Granted, we'll do the 2030 Metro Plan by 2020, but our 2001 plan is something that Greater Minnesota does support. This plan is financed basically out of the two sources, a portion of the MVES fund that was approved by the voters this last year, as well as the half-cent sales tax in the metropolitan area. As you heard earlier, there's an amendment that's changed the split between Greater Minnesota and metropolitan area to 35-5. We do support that particular split. I know there's a lot of talk about different splits, 38-2s as proposed by the governors, and probably every fraction of a percentage in between those two. But we do support the 35-5 split. Historically, in the olden days, when I first started coming down here, there was about an 80-20 split between metro area and Greater Minnesota Transit. And the reason that existed was because of the base in what we were spending in Greater Minnesota versus the metro area was at about that same 80-20 split. Today, that split is different, and the 35-5 actually approximates what we're doing if you look at the 2006 and 2007 budgets, and that's our reason for supporting it. That percentage doesn't give 100% of what Greater Minnesota needs or 100% of what the metro needs, but it keeps us both improving along the way, and that's what we're hoping to do with this bill. And I know there's other bills that you'll hear over the course of time that talk about the percentages, but the 35-5 is the one that we will continue to support. The 38-2, if that comes to fruition over the next biennium, will only generate about $1.24 million additional dollars for Greater Minnesota. We have a need just to maintain services of $4.22 million. So that's just about $3 million short of us being able to maintain our existing levels of service. And even when we talk about existing levels of service, that's not all the service that's on the street. MnDOT, through their budgetary process, has identified about $8 million worth of service in Greater Minnesota that is not funded by state dollars. The DTA up in Duluth accounts for $1.3 million of that service that's on the street today without state assistance. We have a current need for additional services of $1.7 million. This includes going to some newer businesses in town with over 2,000 employees on a corridor that's currently unserved. We'd obviously love to get some expanded money so that we could help those areas out. If the 38-2 is the one that ends up in 2012, Greater Minnesota ends up with an additional $5 million. Versus $102 million in the metro area. Under the 35-5, we get $13.5 million. So more and more, the transit is a necessity in Greater Minnesota, and with our soaring fuel costs, as well as the seniors that are moving into our area, we need to not only maintain our existing levels of service, we need to improve our services. This cannot be done without our state partnership and the state assistance. House File 1112 allows us to do that, and we hope that it passes.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions from the committee? No, thank you, Mr. Hiley. Representative Bedore?
Yes, I'd like to ask Judy Sanders to come up. She's from the Minnesota Federation for the Blind. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Judy Sanders, and I am here on behalf of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota. And I want to begin by saying that we are a membership organization with chapters throughout the state. And every fall we get together, and our big conversation is, what is it that we think the Minnesota legislature needs to know to be of service to blind people for the coming year? And inevitably, transit comes to the forefront. Maybe not always quite to the forefront, but it's high up there. But a lot of times we know we want a top quality transit system, but we don't always know how to get there. We just know we'd like to be able to go out and have a bus pull up and take us where we want to go. Now, that's why we were very pleased to be able to be a part of a coalition that is promoting this bill, and why we are
pleased to be supporting it. They came up with the ideas and we came up with the support. What we want to be able to do is to be able to pay taxes, and we can only do that if we have jobs, and we can only have jobs if we can get to them. We want to use a mainline bus service that will help us do that. I worked for the state of Minnesota for several years, and as a part of my job, I was traveling throughout the state, and I was amazed, and I don't think this has changed, to know that when I wanted to go to Marshall, Minnesota, a nice college town, I discovered that if you don't have a car, you can't get there from here. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that was rather strange. So we need to change a way of thinking. It of course, is evident that blind people need good transit. I don't have to come here and tell you that. But what we really need is a good system that will meet more than our needs. We want to have a system that will make people want to use it, not just for those who have to use it. We have to get people out of their cars and onto the buses, and then it will be easy to have a system that gives us more of them. The leadership role that to make that happen starts with you. Your goal should be to give transit providers the tools they need to give Minnesotans a first-class transit system, one that shows the rest of the nation this is how it's done. And I want to thank you for making this happen.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Sanders. Are there any questions? No, thank you very much. Representative Bedore, do you have...
Can I have one more testifier for you, and then that will be it. It will be brief. Sarah Mullins from Isaiah.
Welcome to the committees.
Hi. Thank you, Chair, for hearing my testimony today. My name is Sarah Mullins, and I'm a member of St. Luke's Catholic Church in St. Paul and chair of Isaiah's Metropolitan Equity Committee. I also work for 3M, where I'm a research chemist in the area of nanotechnology. Today, I'm here to speak on behalf of all Isaiah congregations. Isaiah is an interfaith organization of 85 congregations across Minneapolis, St. Paul, the metro suburbs, and St. Cloud. Our members share a common faith value basis and a vision for the future of Minnesota as a hopeful community made strong by ensuring economic and social opportunities for everyone. Our core faith value, simply put, everyone matters. We are individuals, but fundamentally we are called to be in relationship with each other, and there are times that we are called to act collectively. Isaiah leaders have faith in the democratic process to hear the voice of the community and to have legislators work with us as partners in making decisions for both the short and long-term health of our community. So why did I start this transit campaign? When I was a graduate student researcher, I could not afford a car. I was totally dependent on the transit system. Scheduling my life around the bus system, I face the same challenge as every transit-dependent rider. Can I get there? And once I'm there, can I get home? It sort of worked, but after a while, the limited transit system wore me down. While my profession is science, my faith calls me to serve the community. I want to be part of making a better future for myself and for the people I love, whether it is judging a science fair or attending a community meeting. Most frustrating to me was I could rarely respond to an invitation with a definitive, yes, I will be there. I took cabs for special events, but I really couldn't afford that for any kind of routine activity. I'm acutely aware of what I missed because the bus didn't go there or didn't run at the time I needed it. Isaiah envisions a statewide transportation system in which everyone can get around, including those unable to drive. We have been talking transit in our congregations for over 4 years now. We know that this need exists beyond the Twin Cities Metro. Our members in St. Cloud from the Belle Claire Estates Mobile Home Park live 2 miles outside of the bus service area. Last month at the town hall meeting, a recent immigrant spoke of trying to get to ESL classes
to fulfill her dream of integrating into her new community. The park manager spoke of teens who wanted to work at the Crossroads Mall but can't get there. So just as I had to sort of opt out of many activities before, so do these people. The lack of adequate transportation is a barrier to many Minnesotans who want to opt in to the very activities that create the high quality of life that we associate with Minnesota. Since 2004, Isaiah has hosted over 100 town hall meetings and forums on transit in our congregations. It's not hard to sustain this conversation because we know in our guts that transportation hits at the core of accessing opportunity in everyday life. With every meeting, a new voice comes that adds and deepens Isaiah's collective commitment to this purposeful investment in the well-being of all Minnesotans. These stories are why we are at your legislative hearings, at Metro Transit hearings on service cuts, and why we're hosting our own discussions. Isaiah joined the Transit Partners Coalition to work with community organizations and policy experts to put our faith values into action and to create a proposal that provides adequate, stable funding for transit. I speak tonight on behalf of over 50,000 Isaiah members who support House File 1112. This bill addresses an urgent and ongoing need, a transportation system that truly serves the community. And yes, we are ready to raise taxes. In providing this stable funding, we would move forward to fulfilling the promise of a state that works for all of its residents. Because now is the time to move our current reality closer to our vision, not limit our vision so that it fits our current reality.
Thank you very much. I just realized we need to be in session at 6 o'clock. And I'm sorry I forgot about that. Representative Medor, if I may, and we have Representative Groot, if you would care to repeat your motion that House File, I've forgotten the number?
1112
be held over for possible inclusion into transportation finance.
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We didn't vote up apparently on your amendment. If we could, if the membership could vote on the amendment, as you recall, she made a change. It was amendment 1112-2A1, and so I didn't call for the vote. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
The amendment passed, and we'll lay the bill over. Representative Ruth, if you want to, you have someone, I think, from out the area, and for the other, we have one testifier to come from a distance. And while they're coming up, we do not have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow, and you'll have to watch your emails as far as anything further goes. And Representative Ruth, do you want to move?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 964 for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill. And, you know, we've had so many different percentages going, but I prefer the House the best. And if you read this, it's 35% goes to the greater Minnesota and 5% for the metropolitan area, so I'm going for it.
Representative Ruth, I think basically that was your bill, and I think unless the members have a question, I think they understand what it is. Is that correct? So we can let your testifiers make their statement?
Right. It's 35%, 35.5 of the 40%, right. And 35.5.
If you would, we'd appreciate it. We do need to get over the capital, and I'm sorry that I'm going to have to, and I think the mayor was here yesterday or the day before.
I was here on Tuesday, yes, sir. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. On Tuesday, Tim Breeze, a council member from Winona, discussed the differences on Greater Minnesota transit needs and the metro area. Today, I'll talk about the financial comments for funding. Minnesota Greater Minnesota Transit Plans calls for 80% of the transit services needs in Greater Minnesota to be met by 2010 and 90% to be met by 2020. To do this would require 9% of the MVEST revenues. The plan projects a need for 16.7 million trips per year, Current services meet only about 75% of that needs. Looking at the chart, and the charts have been handed out, you can see that the Greater Minnesota Transit Millennium's current level services, the chart created by MnDOT, illustrates the gap between our current service and long-term goal. The project 2007 to 2012 service needs based on a MVEST split of 38-2. You can see that the MVEST split is no growth for Greater Minnesota. If you look at the growth at 38-2, there is no growth as it gets out in 2010, 11, 12. And you can see the green line that would show the needs. So there is a great separation. As mayor, I understand that you need to budget and you need to balance it. You need to geographically and priority base it. So I know 9% isn't possible, but I would love to have you consider House File 964 and the 35-5 split. The handout also shows on the bottom the difference between the 35-5 and the 38-2, the difference in dollars that would be collected throughout 2000 for the five-year period. In your final transportation package, I hope that you remember the needs for Greater Minnesota Transit and urge that you support the 35-5 split.
Did that complete your testimony?
That will complete my testimony.
Were there questions from the members? Not. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank
for
you.
The members that need, if you need to rush, we will complete some testimony, so some of you need to leave. We do have some testifiers apparently who went up here. So, it's good to have you, other gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes.
Thank you.
I think we're complete. So.
Oh, you are complete.
Right.
We have two other people who wanted to testify.
Okay.
Maybe they just for the record, I presume. Again, before the members leave, we do not have a meeting tomorrow, but watch your website for next meeting. Mr. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. James Clark from Messling Kramer, representing the Suburban Transit Association. And, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to be very, very, very brief. Earlier in the day, there was another bill that was on the agenda, Representative Mason's bill, and just wanted to remind folks of the, as you've already heard, the need for the metro area. Mr. Chair, as you know, there are over 24 park and rides in the metro area that are at or over capacity. There are another four that are over 90% full. Since 1999, park and ride usage has grown by a whopping, God bless you, by a whopping 223% in the metropolitan area. And just want to, again, remind folks that in the bill in 2005, the Earhart Amendment did include the 38-2 split, and that the Metropolitan Council has indicated that in order to do the Tier 1 transitways on their priority list, that the 38-2 split is necessary. And, Mr. Chair, you've heard the need, and I really wanted to thank the committee for coming out and Chair Hornstein for having all the hearings that you've had, and Mr. Chair, Chairman Leader, you've been at those hearings, and I know you've heard the testimony from the folks in Plymouth and the folks in Burnsville and the folks in Maple Grove. And so again, Mr. Chair, we just wanted to, as a reminder, remind folks that yes, we know that there is a tremendous need in Greater Minnesota, but we just wanted, since Representative Mason's bill was on the agenda earlier, we just wanted to come up and talk about the 38-2 as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, or not Mr. Chair, members, we're going to have to lay the other bill over. I've forgotten about it. Representative Hornstein has a file. We're going to have to lay that over because we do need you to get out here. And there was another, thank you, Mr. Clark. Well, that's when I testified. She didn't testify.
Mr. Chair, we could probably get that done in a minute.
Welcome to
Mr. Today. Chair, Sarah Erickson, Metropolitan Cities. I just wanted to draw your attention to the handout that we circulated. We are also in support of Representative Mason's 38-2 bill. And on the sheet, it walks through the different balances as far as who will see an overall increase to their budget when it's phased in. And I just wanted to go on record as supporting the 38-2 split. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we do have some testimony that was Ms. Erickson, or is that for Representative Ruth?
For Representative Ruth, thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Representative Ruth, I just want to confirm, did your testifiers say that what was really needed was 31-9 as a split?
That was the previous bill, too.
The chair, that is correct, Representative Morrow.
We do have testimony, written testimony submitted by Sarah Mullins. You have that in your packet. And also another one by Mr. Green. And thank you very much for the written testimony. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. McLaughlin. I think we won't be able to hear you. Thank you, though. Because we do need to get out of here. So unless there are any other comments or questions. Oh, Representative Ruth, restate your motion.
I just want to remind everybody that there are seven counties that do not have transit, and we would certainly invite the entire committee to come to the rural area and see what we have. We have great needs from transit. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 964 be laid over for possible inclusion in the House Transportation Finance Bill.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you.
And I'm pretty aware of it, too, so we'll watch it. And till the next meeting on Tuesday, I believe, unless we notify different, the meeting's adjourned.